Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the most frightening 9 minutes on internet radio. This is Dr. John Stamey, and welcome to ScaryCast. We've got a great show lined up tonight, and so far I have with me two of my favorite people who have been to a number of my Comic-Cons, and we've just had a grand time. First of all, ladies first, I want to introduce the one and only Angelia Scheer. She is the executive director of Tennessee MUFON, and she is the head and founder of Parashear Research. How are you doing tonight, Angelia?
Hey, Don. How are you guys doing? I'm doing awesome. I always love it when I get to come on with you guys. And a big shout-out to Rob over there. I know he's on. We haven't gotten to see each other in a while, so I'm excited to be on tonight. I appreciate you having me here tonight.
Always, always, and I'll tell you what, we'll all get to see each other together at the Fall Georgia Bigfoot Conference, which is October the 20th, 21st, and 22nd, and it's going to be in Clayton, Georgia at the Raven County Civic Center, but more on that later. Right now, I will introduce my other co-host. Can't do it without him. He is one of the true great friends that I've had and one of the best people to ever be on a podcast with me, Papa Stro, the maestro of wrestling. How are you doing tonight?
Ah, wonderful, wonderful. Great to be back here on ScaryCast, the most frightening podcast ever on the air with you guys. Shout out to Angelia. Missed you all so much. Oh, so great to hear your voice. It's wonderful.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you know, you and I are laughing because we do have a lot of little levels of jokes and everything. And, it is certainly sometimes frightening. But that's okay. We're glad to have everybody here. And now, Angelia, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've been up to? Because you are a full-time paranormal, I hope you don't mind the word, you're like full-time paranormal researcher with Parashear Research, along with your activities to move on. What are you up to these days?
Oh, gosh, Dr. J, I am slammed. And Rob over there, I don't know about you guys. It sounds like Rob's busy too. But, yeah, I'm a probably 40 years in UFO researcher. And as all true boots on the ground researchers know, the UFO, you know, we always laugh. There's a circle. And it doesn't matter if you come into the circle studying paranormal things, cryptid things, UFO things. They all come together eventually with different people experience different phenomena along the same spectrum. You know, I have people that I work with that have had really close-range UFO sightings, and it's amazing. You know, in a short period of time, they'll have all kinds of paranormal things break out. But I have just been extraordinarily busy and just really blessed. I'm speaking all over the place this year. I'm almost booked to the end of the year. So I'm very fortunate I get to go out and talk to a lot of people. And, you know, really my main goal in that is I want to educate the public at how prevalent these sightings are and also provide a place for people to come and share their stories where they feel safe. You know, the things are changing. I wrote an article the other day. Rob brought up something interesting. I bet I've gotten 200 texts and emails in the last week about the government, you know, admitting that they've been studying UFOs. Well, just to tell you how that goes, that really came out about a year ago, maybe more than that. So it's funny. I feel like we're in soft disclosure right now. So we're being bombarded right now with things. So, yeah, so I've been extraordinarily fortunate and very busy with speaking engagements and true research. I had two close-range triangular craft were reported this week, and one woman was very scared in tears. So my team is busy looking into those cases.
Now, when you talk about your team, you're talking about your team through Tennessee MUFON, okay? All right. Music Man is here. So Angelia, you're talking about your team through Tennessee MUFON, correct?
Yes, I have a team on my private research group and also a team with Tennessee MUFON, my STAR team, and we do a lot of work together. So I was referring to that team, the MUFON team, because those cases came in through MUFON.
Right. Now, all right, let me propose a case to you. Are you ready? You probably didn't know you were going to get a case handed to you right now. A gentleman approached me at the Tennessee Big Conference last year, and he told me about interactions with the blue people. And I may have mentioned this to you, but he and his friend were walking along down the road, and some rather tall, slightly glowing blue people walked up to them from a field, approached them, and he said, "You know, I didn't exactly know what to do. I was frightened, but I said hello." And they smiled, just like they understood what I was saying. Of course, we were petrified. The first thing I asked was, "Now, did you lose any time?" He said, "Well, I don't know. I mean, we remember everything that we remember." And so I wrote it all down. And the very interesting thing is I spoke with his brother, with his mother, and with a number of people about this incident, and I was going to present it to you. And then lo and behold, the fellow kind of disappeared on me. Can't find him. Can't find him on Facebook. Can't find him. Can't call him. I even had actually someone go over to his house. House is closed down. And it's in Kingsport, Tennessee. So, Angelia, what do I do? Because I think I got a legitimate report. And I've got about a 300-word essay about it. First of all, am I eligible? Since I wrote it and he proofed it. Am I eligible to send that to you?
Well, you know, it's a little bit difficult. I mean, you can write any kind of article, you know, and because, you know, that was your experience in talking to that person. But usually, if you're going to put a report into the MUFON database, we usually like the actual person to make that report. Now, if you're a close friend of the witness and you're still in contact, then, of course, you can help them put the report in. But, you know, just for investigation's sake, we like to talk to the individual that had the sighting, that kind of thing, so we can get firsthand testimony and, you know, hopefully maybe some firsthand information about where it was. You know, sometimes we can actually, you know, have some evidence that becomes apparent. So, and you know, it is pretty, I hate to say it, but it's fairly common, you know, for people to come forward and I call it, you know, there's buyer's remorse. Well, there's also reporting remorse, what I call it. People will actually make a report and it'll actually freak them out a little bit and they'll disappear. Some will disappear permanently. Others will wind their way back, you know, and talk to you. But some just decide that it's just not their cup of tea and just leave it alone.
They don't put missing people on milk cartons anymore, do they? Or do they still do that?
I haven't seen that in a long time. But when I say disappear, I you know, the people I've talked, I don't know if they really they disappeared from wanting to speak about their sighting for sure. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I just respected them. Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, some people, they just have really high anxiety levels about what happened to them, and they just decide that, you know, they just don't want to talk about it. So, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, you know, I saved Cody, my business partner in Carolina Caricature, actually heard the story. This was at Conabalooza in Kingsport, Tennessee. And then the reporter, the gentleman in question, had called the family member, and I actually hooked him up with an attorney who had given me a report of a sighting of a Bigfoot up in Kingsport. And, of course, when I called the attorney said, "Well, John, there's nothing I can do. I can really tell you the interaction with this person." But it was very strange that the person seemed fairly legitimate. and maybe Angelia, maybe you've had this happen to you. They seem pretty legitimate. They come up with a story. I have a witness that heard the story. I helped them through a particular situation. They verified and okayed the story that I wrote about what happened to them. They disappear. Their house is closed. Now, kind of strange, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, after 40 years of this, my friends call me the Queen of Strange because, you know, there's just in a lot of these cases, there's just strange phenomena that goes on. I had a young man that I was working with, very lucid. He lived over in East Tennessee on a cattle farm, and he was out in the back of his pickup truck with one of his buddies. They were just listening to the radio. And again, out in the rural, very rural area. And this huge, huge craft just slowly came in over the trees and actually shined a light down on them. The engine, they had the car, the truck was running as they were playing the radio, and the engine died, and, you know, classic. You know, it was, they had time distortions, they felt, because, you know, the way that witnesses describe what's happening to him, you know, he said he looked over and he could see his friend's flannel shirt, the color in his friend's flannel shirt. I always think those are interesting markers, show state changes for sure, because here's this huge UFO and this witness is concentrating, you know, he's focused on his friend's shirt, you know, there's this kind of time distortion situation going on. And anyway, he was very lucid, and he developed extreme anxiety while driving, a little paranoia, and after a while he any contact, he just didn't want to talk about it anymore, so I just, you know, dropped it. You know, these things are very life-changing to some people. It completely changes their paradigm of, you know, what they know and feel comfortable with. So that happens a lot, and a lot of strange things do happen.
Yeah, I know that your good friend and mine, and Papa Stroh's John Dixon, who was at the last Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, he said was, you know, John, I had a great reporting of an event. A gentleman called me. Then I called him, and it took me a while to get him back on the line, and he wanted to tell me less and less about the event. And then he would not allow me to come, and then I was not able to get in touch with him anymore. And I guess that's kind of a standard thing, right?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I'm having trouble hearing you. I've got a lot of static or something on the line.
Okay. Well, I was saying John Dixon, you know, he gave no names, no locations. John said he had a very lucid person call him or get in touch with him about a sighting. And then when he tried to start investigating, it was more and more difficult to reach this person. And then it got to the point the person never answered the phone and would never get back in touch with it. So I guess that's a problem from his standpoint as an investigator. I know he's one of your investigators. And I thought it was very interesting until I had this exact experience. I was just trying to help the fellow. The reason that I wrote the story up was because I frankly wanted to turn it into you. But I guess when you have a life-changing experience,
you know, people don't realize how anxiety-provoking. A lot of my witnesses have true post-traumatic stress problems. I mean, I'm an old cardiac nurse, and, you know, I've learned over these years, I'm a trained hypnotherapist too. I went back and got extra training because I was dealing with so many witnesses and people that had fragmented memories. They couldn't find anyone to help them. I mean, these are highly, highly stressful situations. I was talking with another investigator about this, and, you know, in some ways, the way we evaluate cases, sometimes if people are just excited and they're saying they're constantly having sightings, that's not usually the case. That's not how this usually works. Most people that have a true sighting are, at first, very they all have some anxiety, and then it just depends on, you know, the person's, you know, ability to integrate that situation. You know, I've worked with people sometimes years. One of my biggest cases that I'm working on right now that Netflix has just come over and do a TV episode on, where a person had 3 hours of missing time, and we caught some incredible audio while that was happening. During one point of the investigation, he asked me to return all the evidence. I had to return all the pictures, all the video. I had to return all my notes, everything. They had so much paranormal things going on. They had strange people coming around, and they got so frightened and intimidated at some point that they asked for everything to be returned, and we honored it. We returned it. And then within a few
That's worse than Netflix. My goodness. Crazy.
So, but anyway, you know, I just keep working with people, and you know, that's the thing. This isn't an overnight situation. When you work with these people, I commit to these people, meaning is there's rules of engagement. You know, I'm treated with respect and kindness, you know, both ways. But I do not abandon my witnesses in the short term, because this is a long-term situation, at least for the real cases. I mean, these people have to endure a lot of stress. It's not something they wished for. And it takes time for people to work through that. So when some people disappear, that's just part of the statistic. Some people just aren't ready to deal with it. And, you know, that's their choice. You know, if they don't, if they'd rather just put it out of their mind and let it go, then, you know, that's something that we just have to respect.
Well, it really is. And I've got a story. I'm sorry I have to lean on you here, but I'm going to give you a story of something that happened. When I go to Clayton, Georgia, I stay with my friends in Spartanburg County. And I tell you what, right now we have a very special guest who's coming in. And is this Dr. J joining us?
Yes, finally. It's been I've had some trouble trying to get through, but I did get through.
We are so glad you're here, Dr. J.
It's an honor.
Angelia, I'll tell you what. Angelia, I'll finish the story later with you. I'll introduce everybody. Dr. J, John Elias, who is the head of Dr. J Radio Online. He is a radio host. He is a former producer of Art Bell, and he's just an all-around great guy. So, Dr. J, greetings, and we're so glad you made it with us tonight for Scarycast. How are you doing?
Thank you. The honor is all yours and mine. Thank you so much for having me on. Greetings and
are we still there, everybody?
I hope so.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that was very interesting.
Extremely interesting. Dr. J called in, and the entire network just disappeared. Well, anyway, we will we'll grab him back, and hopefully there's Angelia. And there is Dr. J back with us?
Yes.
Good. Dr. J. Dr. J.
Yeah,
this is Papa Stroh. Maestro. Is Angela back with us?
Yes, I'm back. We're just having a terrible connection there. So, sorry, I lost you.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, I
thought we were being inducted, too. Like, We're talking about abductions. I thought we were being abducted too.
Well, you know, I did too. It's like it's barren. There's nothing there. I've never heard so much dead air. But anyway, Dr. J, we're glad to have you here. Angela,
thank you again.
Who is, so that you know, Angela is the head of Tennessee MUFON and director and founder of Parashear Research. Papa Stro, the maestro of wrestling, is an all-around guy, and he's my go-to guy to help us talk and bring things along. And he's a great wrestler, one of the best, and an actor. So I tell you what, I'm glad to have all four of you, including me, on. But you know, it was really weird. It's like you came on, and it was time to stop this conversation. So it must be something must be doing this to us. But anyway, really glad you're here. And we were talking about cases of people losing time and having problems with UFOs and everything. And Angelia is a very, very experienced UFO researcher. And she, you know, she's with Tennessee MUFON. She certainly knows how to talk to people and handle people. And that's something very important. And speaking of UFOs, now you recently, well, not exactly in the last day or so, but recently you did an interview with Stan Friedman, who's like the godfather of UFOs, right?
Yes. Unfortunately, he was, now that he's passed on. He was the godfather, and he was a big instrumental figure. And probably the first face to UFOs that I first started paying attention to back in the 80s that really got me going to pay attention to this topic. And it was just an honor when I finally started to talk to him, and I considered him a great friend. We talked a lot off the record. He's been on the show multiple times over the 7 years, and it was just, he's one of five people who I've had on that passed away after they gave me their last radio interview. So basically the last radio interview of Stanton Friedman and four others involved in the field was with me. And I don't want to say anything good about that, because I don't want to be labeled the Black Widow, but I guess statistically, when you have hundreds and hundreds of people, or that few people in that field who are aging up in those days, then it's inevitable it's going to happen. I just didn't think it would happen to me. It happened first with Roger Lear, Dr. Roger Lear, the alien implant doctor. He lived locally to me too, so I saw him far more often than probably anybody else involved in this field, and then he passed away after I got an interview with him. Then it was Jesse Marcel Jr. I did a radio interview with him. Then he did a conference for the annual Roswell convention, and he passed away. And then Edgar Mitchell, sixth man on the moon, Apollo 13 astronaut. Unfortunately, then Jim Mars, and now Stanton Friedman.
Wow.
I'm going, guys. I'll see ya.
No, Angelia, please stay.
Those are some incredible people to interview, Dr. J. That's some incredible people.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I can't even choose to say who would be my favorite. It'd be like choosing amongst children, because there's so many amazing people, whether it be Roger Stone, the maker of presidents, to the Honorable Paul Hellyer, the highest politician, and that's talking about paranormal, to Jack Osborne, who, wouldn't you know, is greatly interested in aliens, and the list goes on.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Jack Osborne is that's great. We need to talk about that.
I actually met Jack Osborne at Roger Lear's final, the 17th removal of the implant, the 17th implant that he had removed, and that's where I met Jack. Mm-hmm. I was like wondering why he was in the audience. And so we exchanged contact information, and then not too long after that we did the first show, and then we did a second show. And he was so – he wanted to know so much about this information. I asked him if I could record the call like 20 minutes into it. So I actually have another something that I kept that I never released to anyone, even though he said I could. But it's basically me telling him, you know, how far the rabbit hole goes. And this is the only thing I realized, is the further down you go, the more questions you have answered, 10 more questions come about from each answer you get. So to tell you the truth, now, as much as I've learned, I know far less than I used to know.
Proportionally speaking, I guess you do. And that's the way it all is when you do research. The more questions you ask, you get answers, and then you find there are so many more questions. Now, Angelia, one reason that I asked you to be on here, and please don't be scared. We'll do our best to protect you. But because you're the UFO girl, you're our go-to person when it talks about UFOs. And I wanted to let you talk because you are familiar with the work of Stanton Friedman. And that's one reason I wanted you to be on here, is to talk about this a little bit with Dr. J. So I guess I'll be the catalyst, and then I'll ask you, Angelia, to take over. I mean, Dr. J, what did you and Stan Friedman talk about? And I'll hand the torch to Angelia.
Well, one thing,
he talked about how, well, for instance, when I was in elementary school in the 80s and started high school in the early 90s, we were taught that there was only this solar system. There was no planets outside of the solar system, just stars and gas and emptiness. And then, of course, comes the Kepler telescope, and then they started estimating, I don't know what the number was at the time, I think, of however many stars there would be one planet. But one thing that he said is the number has gone up to, for every stars, there is 1.8 planets. And this comes from astronomers in the main field that don't even acknowledge this subject. And he said that, this is the sad part, that he said that this is very exciting times, and he believes that the time for his grandchildren is the time that they'll be able to actually see these beings and interact with them openly. He unfortunately lost that, but I hope through his grandchildren he's able to. And I actually hope to some extent his grandchildren follow through with this, because Jesse Marcel, when he passed away, of course, Jesse Marcel Jr., you know, held the reign, and now Denise Marcel and Jesse Marcel III do the same.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, you know, I'd like to jump in on that. I mean, that's just such a great point. I've been researching 40 years. Stan and I've known each other, oh my gosh, 30 years. Just to tell you what we call boots on the ground researchers. Stan and I, years ago, my father was a professor at Vanderbilt University, so I was reared on physics from the time I was a young child. So I knew the immensity of the universe, but I think those numbers are up. I start a lot of my lectures. There's 280 billion plus stars in the Milky Way galaxy, in our Milky Way galaxy. I think it's like up to 111 million exoplanets now. NASA about a year ago announced they found a planet that's almost just like Earth, which really intimates life is everywhere. And I remember early on, Stan and I, we used to talk about, he had such a wonderful personality and a sense of humor, but he was just a great researcher. And what we were researching together, I actually have some old, I keep them closed, but I have actual documents from the government that were typewritten with the old typewriters. And when we were doing research years ago, we could actually match some of the typeset to those typewriters, and that's how we validated if we thought the papers that we have and the documents were actually legitimate. I mean, that's some years ago, guys, now, when we were matching typeset on papers that, you know, when we had requested Freedom of Information documents from the government back then. So that's what we were working on together with back, I think, with some of the Majestic things, because I had quite a few documents that my father had gathered back in the 50s. So that was my great memory of working with Stan, is actually getting together and talking about those documents. And you mentioned so many great people I got to work with and meet with Edgar Mitchell. I remember, you know, John, we've talked about this before. Edgar Mitchell actually, you know, participated at the Monroe Institute. So when Edgar Mitchell and I got together, we talked about the Monroe Institute and all the interesting things that happened to us, you know, there. Jim Mars, I can't even remember where we were together, probably at some conferences. I remember going up and having him sign his book for me, and we were all speaking somewhere. I can't remember where. Just a great guy, great researcher. I loved his book. So you're lucky to be able to talk to all those people, because they were really some phenomenal people. I did not get to meet John Lear. What's interesting,
yes,
you know, I could talk.
I love John Lear.
Oh, my gosh. I did not get to meet him before he passed away. But, you know,
John Lear. You're talking about Roger Lear. John Lear's still alive.
Roger Lear. The one with the implant situation.
Yeah.
I did not get to meet him. But, you know, that's still an ongoing issue. I've had two or three cases in the past year. Extraordinary things happen around those cases. I had one young man who said that he had constant nosebleeds from the time he was young, and we decided to do some measurements. This was, I won't go into the whole thing, but it was very, you know, as researchers, we have to create ways to research. And we actually came up with a frequency detector that picked up, you know, in transmitting cellular bandwidth. And we were measuring this young man's nose, and our equipment was just going off the scale. And at one point, his nose started bleeding profusely on camera. I mean, you can't even make this stuff up. So, you know, to talk to all these researchers, that was awesome that you got to talk to them. You know, we were kind of building things from the ground up. You know, Travis Walton is one of my dear friends, and Deb Jordan from Bud Hopkins Book, you know, Intruders. People don't know what, you know, everyone went through in the early days. You know, we've been talking about that. It's such a different attitude these days. People are much more open, you know, in discussing these kind of things, and, you know, better educated about what you were talking about, the immensity, you know, of our universe. Infinite, you know, galaxies out there. So.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not
just our galaxy. What about all the other galaxies and then galaxy clusters? And at the same time, I don't think we're in a universe. I truly believe we're in a multiverse.
Well, there's all kinds of possibilities, you know, for sure on that. I was on a radio show, I don't know, few months ago, and they said, "Ange, what do you think's going on?" And I said, "Well, after 40 years of research, interviewing 2,500 actual witnesses that I feel were credible, it's something like Star Trek on steroids. If you take Star Trek on steroids, add in some interdimensionals and some extra dimensionals and anything else that you can possibly imagine, you might come up with what's really going on." So,
yes. And you know what? I'm glad that you were interviewing the people directly, because to me, if you want to know the questions, or if you want to get the answers to the questions that we all have, who better to ask than those who have been taken, those who have interacted with ETs, those who have been in the ships, those who can tell you what they look like, smell like,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything,
yes.
right? The only people you're going to get to the answers to are through them. And I'm not going to try to bash researchers that I've had on, like Richard Dolan or anybody else. But the point is the real answers lie within those people who have been taken, experiencers.
Well, that's what, you know, I have a new book coming out. I hope to get it finished in the next few months. It's some of my best cases over 40 years. And all of us researchers, I want to throw out to Barry Gaunt up into Kentucky, you know, when we say boots on the ground, we don't just sit behind a computer. I mean, we have to put our notes in, and, you know, we have field notes. But, you know, we're out in the field with people. People don't realize that, you know, the danger we're in. My whole team, we're armed. We get out of the truck and we say lock and load. We're in some dangerous situations.
Nice.
You know,
nice.
I'm a girl. You know what I was investigating the other day? Snake boots. Because now it's warm and we're out, we could get snake bit. I mean, you know, so I'm having to buy new. We have equipment. People don't realize the things that we're doing out doing our research. And with our witnesses, like you said, my book is about, you know, I said I think the most least investigated part of ufology is the witnesses themselves. So not only have I been researching their experiences, but I've been researching the actual abilities and what happens to these witnesses after their sightings, the extreme transformative events that happen around their lives, different things. Because, as you say, I validate you 100%. 40 years of research validates it. It's all about, you know, I said we have some of the best evidence and the best people to talk to. And, you know, what I really get up on a soapbox for is some of these people are truly extraordinary in their perceptual abilities. And these people have been ridiculed and marginalized when we need to be talking and, you know, asking them what's going on and studying, you know, what's been happening around their lives, for sure. And that's what my book's all about. So I love that. I validate you 1,000% on that, for sure.
I look forward for when your book's coming out. Do you have a time frame?
I'm hoping to have it out in the next 6 months. I have a couple of chapters left. I have so many wonderful witnesses. You guys, it's just, you wouldn't believe the witnesses where, you know, they actually, I'm having the witnesses do their own artwork because I want it to come from them. I don't want it to be polished. I want it to be authentic. So, you know, I'm working with some extraordinary, probably about 15 to 20 extraordinary witnesses. That had events of missing time, high strange, high paranormal events, you think of it, it happened. And these are witnesses that I feel are extraordinarily credible. We have some incredible evidence around their sightings. And, you know, especially what the witness went through, as you spoke about, I really kind of did a whole in-depth research on the extraordinary perceptual abilities preceding these events, and then, you know, after these events, how these witnesses' lives were changed. So I'm hoping to get it out in the next 6 months. I hope sooner than that, but I'm giving myself a little leeway there.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I really hope you do. Have you found a publisher or someone for it? I mean, there's a lot of published UFOs. I would think someone would definitely pick this up.
Yeah. We're looking into different things right now. So we haven't decided on a final thing. Like I said, I'm finishing up. I have just two more chapters and I'll be done. But I'm polishing those up and working with, I'm actually invited on two actual field events coming up with some extraordinary investigators and some extraordinary people that have had some experiences. One of them I'm going to actually interview in the field. So that's going to be one of my final chapters, and that should hopefully be this weekend, believe it or not.
That's great.
Excellent. Excellent. And do you have a working title?
It's called UFO Encounters, is the main title of the book, and it's Human Transformation and Radical New World is the title of the book.
That'd be fantastic. And you know what? With 2,500 people that you've interviewed, that's got to be a hell of a lot of information. And I'm sure now these are experiencers, right? Contactees, abductees that you're talking about?
Not only. I chose, again, out of those, that broad base, I chose for my first book, people, I'm talking about doing a couple of others, but just on different topics, and I'll discuss that in the book. But I really, what I did is I boiled it down to a sampling of what I felt like were cases that were representative of the 2,500, meaning, you know, different types of cases that are represented in there. And again, you know, all of them show common denominators throughout, that thread throughout that research. But I have them, you know, I have straight up UFO sightings. Just, they were out in the backyard. Somebody walked out and saw, and I'm talking about a close range sighting. I'm not talking about a little star or a little light up in the sky. I'm talking about 1,000 feet, 200 feet over your head, extraordinary, you know, sightings. And my team has been present for some extraordinary close range sightings with my witnesses. And then, you know, there's a sampling of people that have missing time and, you know, actual interface with other entities and can describe them. You know, I've been present with people while they were undergoing their hypnosis, so I have samplings of those cases. So I tried to pick up, you know, my book's already 170 pages, and I have like 20 cases that I'm going through, so I've had to, you know, pare it down just a little bit. But I did try to have an overall view of the general common denominators that show up in a broad range of cases.
Nice. Nice. I definitely look forward, like I said, when this comes out.
Well,
what
I appreciate
about
that.
Skeptics?
I appreciate that.
Did you address any in the book? Did you, when you encountered any of them? Because I always try to give some to the other side.
Well, you know, I'm not, that's not my deal. I deal with credible people who I feel like if you put them in a court of law, they would convict you of murder. And, you know, what I think is really interesting, our whole justice system is predicated on witness testimony. And so you can go to prison on witness testimony, but you get a credible witness that had a UFO sighting or said this thing happened to them and they're ridiculed. I think that's ridiculous. Doing this for 40 years, there are some people out there, I could bring a live alien into a studio or here with you guys, and somebody would try to convince you it wasn't, they would say
that
it wasn't.
Fake. You're absolutely
and, you
right,
know,
Angela. Let me
so
tell you
I just
this.
Don't waste my I just don't waste my time on that. There are certain people that are just so closed-minded that you can bang your head on a wall for the next 14 days and it doesn't matter.
You're absolutely right. You could produce an alien and a ship, and if someone will say the ship was built by us and the alien is some sort of experiment with DNA, people will never believe it no matter what happens. I think it's going to be a matter of generation. 50 years ago, you brought this topic up and you were serious about it, you could have been thrown into the puzzle factory. But now it's more open. Now you have many major networks on cable TV. You have Travel Channel, Destination America, and, of course, History Channel, National Geographic, Discovery, A&E. They're all talking about this. And they put a lot of money into these shows. And obviously the people who produce them are curious enough to allow it to be produced.
Well, you know, something I have a quote. I'll give this away at the beginning of my book, and it's by Max Planck, who's a famous, famous physicist. And his quote is, "A new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that's familiar with the concept." And, I mean, one of my terrible or wonderful things is we make progress one funeral at a time. I mean, you know, I tell a story. Years ago, I got invited to Vanderbilt University to be a guest at an astronomy lecture. And I remember I went into the room, and this is like 25, 30 years ago, and 50 people in the room, and we were having a dinner, and there was only one little table left, and there was an older gentleman sitting there, and I went over to sit down, and he was very gruff. He said, "Well, who are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm Angelia." And he goes, "Well, what do you do?" And I said, "Well, I'm a UFO researcher." And he goes, "I don't believe in any of that stuff." And I said, "Well, really?" I said, "Who are you?" And he told me I'm the lead astrophysicist for this and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you got it. People are creeping around the table, and I'm very gregarious. My father was very hard on me as a young woman in a great way. He said, "You're going to be educated." He goes, "You are going to learn your stuff. So when you go out there, you know, you're going to be able to hold your own with this onslaught." So, you know, I wasn't shy. So he goes, And I said, well, sir, you're a scientist, right? And he said, yes. And I said, well, have you looked at all the relevant data? And he said, well, TV. And I said, no. I am not talking about a TV show. I'm talking about hard relative data. Have you questioned pilots? Have you questioned some astronauts? Have you looked at radar returns? Have you looked at radiation traces? He said, no. And I said, well, then I guess I don't understand you. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you're a scientist, right? And he said, right. And I said, well, I thought a scientist looked at every piece of relevant data before coming to a conclusion, and you've looked at nothing and came to a conclusion. I thought he was going to hit me. He was so angry. And down at the other end of the table, another scientist spoke up. I said, well, who are you? And he said, well, I'm so-and-so in DNA research. And I said, well, you read Francis Crick's work, didn't you? And he said, who is Francis Crick? I said, are you kidding me? He discovered DNA, and he wrote whole book called Panspermia. He didn't even believe that life originated here because of the design of DNA. And I remember, the story's a little long, but 15 years later, I get invited back. This is how we go. This young man comes up to me, and he goes, I know who you are. And I went, oh, my God, what? How am I? He goes, you're the only person that, you know, really embarrassed professor or whatever. And he said, I took his place. And he goes, you're going to love me. And I said, why is that? And he said, life in the universe, I'll give you any odds, it exists. And we had a great time. I mean, and that just shows how attitudes have shifted over the years. We really are an exciting time. And, you know, I'm very careful with my predictions, but from the evidence that I've seen, it seems that we're in soft disclosure. I mean, you know, the government has admitted they study UFOs. NASA keeps coming forward that they keep finding all these exoplanets. You know, I mean, when you have Tucker Carlson releasing an actual Air Force guy talking, I mean, never in my whole life, I've never seen a military pilot come forward till then and talk about chasing UFOs. So I think we're in exciting times, extraordinary times.
Have you noticed how Tucker Carlson's go-to guy is Nick Pope? Now, that's great. No, I mean, it just shows me that for once you have a mainstream news media that covers it. Now, obviously, Larry King, in his day, sure, he had people on, you know, a couple times a year, but Tucker is the only one of Fox News that I see that actually takes the subject seriously.
Absolutely. I love Tucker. I mean, he's done a great job. So, but as you were pointing out, I mean, we really had some incredible disclosures. They're very subtle. You have to kind of look for them, but they're there. I mean, you know, it's almost kind of like, let's just see what the public does with this. You know, let's just see what the public does with it. You know, it's like feeding everybody a little bit at a time, just to gauge everyone's reaction. But we're just in extraordinary times, and you're in extraordinary position too. You know, with that's what we need. You know, just like John here and yourself. You know, interviewing people and, you know, kind of getting the word out. I feel like, you know, my job has been to work with my witnesses. I care about my witnesses. That's what my God put me here to be, UFO girl. I mean, I care about them more than anything. I mean, for a lot of people, they have had no voice and no place to go. So I'm really proud of my people that have come forward. And, you know, they need a place to come forward. And I've actually had a couple of my witnesses come on the radio with me. You know, several have come out and spoke with me to people, and they've been very well received. So,
you know, I gotta tell you this, Angie, and this is one thing that to me is shows you just how little that the people who have the most knowledge are getting attention. Just some listeners over the years who happen to be contactees or abductees, because I always love those two topics, whether it be contact, abduction, or crash and retrieval. I've had more people from listening to the show that reached out to me, and then ended up interviewing them, and they know so much more. I mean, some of them are artists, and they were able to draw like literally almost images of everything they'd seen
in during their abduction. One, in fact, was taken in a school. He had a picture of an orb showing up in his classroom where no one could see this orb but him. Then the orb goes out. He follows this orb. The janitor sees the orb materialize into a being, an extraterrestrial being. Then another instance, another orb shows up in a playground with all the other children, and this orb manifests into a giant craft. You know, that's just, it's insane to think about, but they have this technology, and we know this.
And, you know, you're wonderful. Dr. John, you have the best guest, but, you know, you'll have to make me stop talking. I had a young man, and, you know, the reason I promote myself is not for myself. You know, I don't make money on this. I have a job in the real world. You know, I've been obsessed with this since I was a little girl. This is just my job. And the reason I put my name out there is because exactly what you – this is how I get my cases. This is how I get to talk to extraordinary people every single day. About 2 years ago, since you brought that up, I had a young man send me a video, incredible video. I could not – you can see it on my website, Parashir Research. It's on there. It's called Transforming Light on Facebook. He sent me a video. I put it through everything I had, couldn't debunk a thing. It shows they live in a very rural area. They kept having some paranormal lights in the trees, that kind of thing. He put a very cheap low-light IR camera, games camera out. One night he caught, it looks like a rod of light. It touches the ground, and when it touches the ground, it looks like it transforms into a small being that walks across the ground, walks around in a circle, goes behind a tree. You wait some seconds, and a huge orb, white orb, flies out from behind the tree. Well, I was not passing that up. I took my whole team as fast as we could get down there. You guys should see, you know, we've got pickup trucks with all kinds of gear and FLIR cameras. I mean, it takes us, you know, we deploy, we got down there, unloaded. The first thing that happened was we sent out our $2,000 drone. I love our drone. High-res cameras, stabilize it in wind. We take pictures of the whole area. We get, you know, the topos going. Well, anyway, at one point it was 70 degrees outside, no wind, and our drone started reporting back. It was going to collide with something. Well, we had visuals on it. There was nothing there. Then it started reporting back that there was electromagnetic field distortions or, you know, problems. We almost lost the drone, and then every piece of equipment that we had died. We had to stop the whole investigation and recharge. Well, the reason I'm getting excited is what you're talking about. We get back in the woods that night. We set up, and we're in the pitch black just waiting. We took out our FLIR camera. I put it up on one of my big iPads so we could see. And very close, there's an entity that seems to be trying to get our attention, like waving at us to some degree. We could not see this entity with a naked eye, but it showed up on our FLIR cameras. I got one of the best pictures. I love this picture on my FLIR camera of this being actually trying to get our attention from that video that young man sent. So to me, it's extraordinarily exciting, exactly what you talk about. I get to talk about with people every day that are having these cases. That's why I'm trying to do high-end artwork in my book, because my witnesses are, I want them to draw what happened to them. You know, they go, Ange, I'm not an artist. I go, I don't care. You draw what happened to you, because then it'll be authentic. And we have extraordinary cases that, you know, missing time, huge orbs of light changing into this. Mm-hmm. Just everything that you mentioned there is happening with people, and it's extraordinary.
And, you know, missing time, I've always been fascinated with that, because that's one of the telltale signs that people were taken. Have you ever heard of the YouTube channel Thursday Moon?
I'm sorry, you broke up. The YouTube channel what?
The YouTube channel named Third Phase of Moon.
Yes,
they're
I
one of the world's largest. Yeah, they're good friends of mine. It's Blake and Brent cousins. They're identical twins, and I was actually with them in Hawaii a couple weeks ago, and they told me that when they were 4 years old, three beings came into their room, and then they said they don't know if they were abducted. They don't think so. They don't remember it. I'm like, well, if you were abducted, chances are it'd be suppressed. And then they just recounted something that sounds to me like they were taken again. They were with friend, and they were camping on top of a mountain in the, on the large island of Hawaii. And what they thought was a silent helicopter, which was shining a spotlight on their tent, which they just, you know, chalked it off to being a helicopter. And it wasn't until recently when they were talking to one of their friends who was camping with them, and so, and they mentioned the helicopter that had no sound. And friend's like, "What helicopter? That was a craft. That was a disc-shaped craft." And not to say, as you know this, is they come in all sorts of shapes and sizes, but that was a typical, you know, dome-shaped craft.
Yeah, well, you know, just a week ago in so many different directions, you know, what we're playing around with as far as my book goes with human perception, you know, you have to take into consideration if some of these beings are telepathic, which we have so much evidence that they are, they could implant all kinds of images in your mind. You know what I mean? Just like
right.
I have so many witnesses that have there, you know, do you remember Close Encounters where he was obsessed to build that thing? He built it out of mashed potatoes,
yep.
And then he built it out of it.
Yep.
Well, my witnesses do the same thing. Guys, y'all should, sitting in my office here, I have my office. I have, right now, I have four journals that were just sent to me. Some of them are over 100 pages long with detailed sketches and notes of ongoing contact. I mean, you know, people are not going to spend this much time on something to just make it up. I mean, detailed sketches of how a being looked or how the craft looked or how it transformed, or beautiful paintings of owls looking in the window or deer looking in the window, which we know that's not really what it was. It's almost like a screen memory. You know, one of the cases that I'm working on, one of my favorite I have right now, so much evidence, I have a witness that had 3 hours and 20 minutes of missing time. Right before this happened, he was out in his barn, beautiful, wonderful farm. He had taken his cell phone out to take a video of a little nest of baby birds, thought he turned it off. He didn't, laid it down upside down on the table. Went to the side door, opened the door, bright flash of light. He wakes up 3 hours and 20 minutes later, 80 feet from the barn on his back. Long story short, we caught 2 hours and 20 minutes of audio on the cell phone. That's the scariest audio you've heard. Multiple voices, feminine voices, a total non-human voice. We've actually had it on MUFON Radio two or three times, and it's the episode that Netflix wants to do a show about. But, I mean, incredible evidence, you know, that happened all around this witness, and they're still having paranormal phenomena. You know, they put in a high security system in their house, a very well-to-do family, and huge orbs, just pulsating orbs, fly through their house and out the window. And, you know, we've got all kinds of stuff that going on. So you're exactly right. I mean, that's why I do these shows. I always shout out and say, if there's anyone out there and you need to talk to someone, call me. You know, this information is important. So you're extraordinarily right about that. It's incredible. I get to talk to those people every single day.
I agree. And you know what? Things are happening every single day. Now, 50, 70 years ago, something happened. Weather balloon, swamp gas. But now, if you see footage of it, CGI is what the deal. It's like the as we get with the times, so do the false explanations. Clearly, everything's not CGI. What I tend to look for on YouTube is if someone has a YouTube channel where they're posting about their dog or their cat or their family vacation, and then out of 100 videos, one says, UFO over my house or something. Well, why would they post that unless that's what they filmed? You know, they're not someone who
right.
is out there to make money on YouTube or someone who focuses
right.
on UFOs. Those are the ones that I'm like, okay, that's somebody who I would like to ask if I can use their footage.
Right. Well, I had a case just come in this week, very interesting. I had an individual that was driving on the interstate, and they were just bored, and they actually had their cell phone up videoing out the window, but they were singing, and they go, I know, I think I'm a great singer, but I'm really not. They were singing. They were very humble. And they were just singing and driving, and a huge triangular craft goes over their car. It scared them so bad, they pulled the car over and actually were in tears. They were so frightened. And we have that video. I mean, we're going to send a team out in the next few days. We're going to go to the location, and we're going to make sure we rule out everything we can rule out. But, yeah, I mean, I remember years ago when there were lectures, let's say, about UFOs. I would go to these lectures. I remember going to one to a local university. There was probably 400 or 500 people there. And I would just sit in the audience and just wait to the end of the lecture and just see who kind of just lingered. I remember there was a farmer there in overalls. And I remember I went up and spoke to him because I knew why he was there. And I said, you know, sir, I'm a researcher. And I said, would you talk to me? And he said, well, yeah. And he had been out plowing, and this UFO came down over his head, 50 or 60 feet. He goes, and I didn't know what that was. So, yeah, there's definitely parameters into searching true cases for sure.
Absolutely. And you know what? People at this stage, if they're having a nice career and a nice life they don't want disrupted, why would they tell these stories? Why would they go public unless it was true? A lot of people fail to recognize that. They're just out to sell books or that. Well, really, I could tell you a bunch of authors who have written books on UFOs don't make anything. You know, they don't.
They can't quit their
day job. You know what I mean? They cannot quit their day job. There's no way to make support from it. No way. There's only a handful of people that
can
do
this. I love you. Do you know at my last lecture? At my last lecture, I started it out like this. I said, okay, guys, I'm going to make up a story today. I prayed about 400 people at this lecture. I said, I'm going to make up a story today. I'm going to make up the story that I saw a UFO, and not only did I see a UFO, I saw a Bigfoot. Now I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to tell my family, and I'm going to tell my employer so all of you can make fun of me for the rest of my life. And then I go, why would I do that? There is no reason. And I fussed at them, and everybody applauded. I said, guys, listen, if you have a loved one or a friend and they're sane and stable and you've known them and they're not prone to, like, fabricating, and they tell you something strange, why would you make fun of them? Why would you not believe them? They have no reason to make up a story like this. I'm telling you, people do not get famous. I mean, sometimes these people are terrified. They're made fun of. They could get fired from their job. I mean, you're exactly right, 1,000%. You know, there's just no reason for most people to come forward. And I go after those people to talk to them. And it's just, you know, and I really just, I'm like you, I don't get that. I actually talked to a family at the last conference where the mother had seen all these orbs in the backyard and the whole family was making fun of her. And I was like, I kind of chastised them a little bit. Everybody got quiet because I said, this woman, why would she make this up so you guys could just make fun of her? What possible motivation could she have to do that?
Agreed. Amen. Why would anyone at that point? Especially when you have professional debunkers. There's one that I always use, Robert Schaefer, to debate. Unfortunately, I used to always have Stan Friedman debate him. Now I have to have someone step up to the plate. But no matter what Robert Schaefer says, who's basically the new Philip Klass, but he's still the old school of the Joe Nichols, I believe it is. They look very much alike, Mr. Nichols and Mr. Schaefer do. But they will come up with the craziest reasons. For instance, the one that happened in New Mexico, what was it, the Sakura incident, right?
Yep.
With Lonnie Zamora, remember that?
Oh, I remember Lonnie Zamora's case. That was, I remember the Zamora case.
The way
this
was dismissed was they said some grad students had inflated a giant weather balloon and somehow were able to power it enough to fly there, and they were wearing white jumpsuits, and that's what he saw. Really? So some grad students from
I've been
university
listening to that.
It's bizarre. Like, nothing will come true to them.
No,
and I found something else out that really blew me away. The Roswell I-beam. And I found this out when I was just paying attention. Someone told me to
listened to Joe Rogan's interview with Tom DeLonge, and I had to look to see afterwards myself to make sure this was true, that part of the I-beam spells in Greek only a few letters don't look exactly like the A. Instead of being an A with, you know, it's missing the line and the horizontal line in the middle, but it still has that, you know, the vertical up and down, right? It spells Eleftheria, which means freedom. Why would that be written in a spacecraft?
I have no clue.
It's just
clue.
Another big part of the puzzle, but it, you know,
but
obviously
you know
that
you
all
bring
these
up such funny things that all of us true investigators we actually laugh at, because just what you said, the explanations are more absurd than the sightings.
It's true. It's very true. And,
I'm kidding.
Dr. Hynek, when after Project Blue Book, when he acknowledged that most of the good stuff he was never shown, and that even the stuff he was shown that he was forced to create explanations for, and
right.
he became a believer. And if that
Absolutely.
Isn't enough for people to say, look, this person was brought in by the Air Force, he was a skeptic, he was an astronomer, and at the very end of two decades, what does he do? He turns around and says, guess what, folks? This is true. My brother, in fact, yesterday just sent me a New York Post article that the Pentagon and DOD still investigate. Now, we both knew this already. All four of us listening right, or talking right now knew this, that investigates UFOs, or as they label them, unidentified aerial phenomenon. And then they have this threat abbreviation. It's like a 5 or 6 letter abbreviation of this threat initiative that they have. They say end in 2012, but other sources state still continues. And then the Navy even issued new orders of how to report UFO and USO activity
to
the higher ups. Why would they still be doing this if this was all hogwash 50 years ago?
You know, that all of us that have been doing this for so long, we have seen so much with our own eyes, and we've spoken to so many people that, you know, that there's a place for, you know, the debates and things. That's just not my deal. You know what I'm saying? We just go forward with the people that, you know, that we're working with and we feel are credible, and we just, you know, keep pushing forward, because there's just so much overwhelming evidence. Just like I said, I mean, if everybody would really think about it, our whole judicial system is based on credible witness evidence. I work with credible, I mean, on my team right now, my star team, you have to earn your way on this team. I mean, you have to investigate so many cases. You have to be familiar with all the equipment. You have to talk to so many people. Well, my co-investigator, Mr. Don Williams, pillar of the community, pilot, military pilot, you know how he got convinced? He had his own private plane flying back from Texas about 5 years ago, and this object streaked in front of his aircraft and cut him off. He goes, Ange, I'm a military guy. I know what aircraft look like. I know what terrestrial aircraft look like. He said, if I had hair on the back of my neck, it would have stood up. So, you know, you just talk to people day after day after day, people that are crying, people are in tears. I've talked to some of the most hardened military guys, ex-SWAT guys, police officers that, you know, that have never shared it in 40 years because they were afraid about, you know, ridicule. And they'll come forward and talk to me, and they'll almost be in tears and apologize. And I'll say, would you please stop? Don't apologize. You know, people need a platform. They need a place to feel safe and, you know, that they'll be believed. And that's what my team and teams like mine provide for people. I mean, you know, this is just exciting. I mean, I just can't even understand how people can look at through the Hubble and look out into an immense universe, as you talked about, unlimited galaxies, as far as you can see forever, and think truly that we are the only things around. If we were, I think that would be pretty extraordinary. I mean, that would be the weirdest
yes,
thing.
Yes, to say the least, yes. What's your favorite case?
I'm sorry?
Public case. What's your favorite public case that most people would know of?
A publication, like a book, or?
No. Case, as far as a famous abduction or something. You've heard that I haven't heard.
I have my own personal cases going on. I have some extraordinary cases that are my favorite ones. But, you know, today one of my dearest friends is Travis Walton. And
yes.
His case is all, I mean, he comes and stays here, you know, with me sometimes. I mean, as far as we speak together and Deb Jordan comes in, you know, from Bud Hopkins Intruders, and, of course, we all shop talk. But I have to say Travis's case, of course, is one of the most highly investigated cases, and it stood the test of how many years here.
I was there at his house when he did the, was it 40-year anniversary? Yeah, 2015, 75 to 2015. So that was 4 years ago, almost 4 years ago, November.
Yeah.
And was it 6 or 7 polygraphs that he's undergone that he's not once been found to be lying?
Oh,
and I'm
gosh,
so
that's what I'm
questioning.
Saying.
Why did people give him polygraphs? It's like, come on. The guy was missing for 5 days. People were out in the woods looking for him with search dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They found nothing. He reappeared next to a phone. I mean, right there, that set off alarm bells. That, hey, this guy was not on this damn planet at the time.
Yeah, so that's one. And, you know, with Travis and I, we've talked a lot. I mean, it's interesting what maturity will do in years when you have that long to reflect on what happened. And, I mean, you know, and you know what the cruelest thing? You can tell that something happened to him. I mean, it was traumatizing. But you know what was the most traumatizing? Is how people treated him. I mean, you know, how his community treated him. You know, it was horrible what all of those boys went through. I mean, none of them were ever the same, for sure.
No.
None of
them. No. That's for a fact. Is it Steve Schmidt, I believe, was one of the crewmen, is the only one that I've been communicating with that was part of the logging crew. I don't know what happened to the others. I don't know which one, if any, have passed away, but I know some have moved on as far as don't want to be in the public life anymore. But like you said, it wasn't just the logging crew. It was the entire community in the whole town of Heber, Arizona. They went through hell and back. And they're still going through it. And, you know, just as an homage to Travis, that telephone, which we all know right now with smartphones, and I couldn't even find a payphone literally when I had to walk home from a hospital. I had nothing, no phone with me several months ago, and that was like a 3-mile walk. I found one. They kept that payphone up just for him as an homage to his case. It's the only one that exists
Arizona. I have to tell you guys a great story. Probably about 8 or 9 months ago, my honey, John knows him. He's a country music singer. He's out on tour a lot, but we decided that he sings every Christmas out at the Crystal Palace, Buck Owens place. So we decided to take a road trip. So we passed through Arizona, and I said, Dale, I want to go visit Travis. He goes, we're not visiting Travis. I'm vacationing. And so we drive a little bit longer. He makes me close my eyes. We stop, and he gets me out of the car, and he makes me walk blindfolded up, and he says, open your eyes. And it's the payphone booth, and he goes, I bet you don't know where you are. I said, hey, I'm UFO girl. I know exactly where I am. This is the phone booth where Travis was returned. And I turned around, and there was Travis, and we all got to hang out the whole rest of the day. He came out. And Dale made me a poster. You know, you can tell I'm a UFO girl. It's one of the things I love most. And it's Dale, Travis, and I all in the phone booth, on the phone, phoning home. So, and, you know, I think that's incredible. I mean, you know, they took him out of the forest. And when they brought him back, they dropped him off down the road from a payphone, just like what you said. He goes, Ange, if they'd have dropped me off back up in the woods, I would have frozen to death. So, come on. I mean, you know, you asked me, that's really still one of my, well, he's my friend, and, you know, you hold people dear to your heart. But he endured a lot, more than he should have ever have to endure.
Definitely.
All those people did. Yeah. And, you know, just like Stanton, you know, I like to take my hat off to some of these earlier witnesses and researchers, you know, because they had to really swim through some different waters than we swim through today. So.
Oh, absolutely. I think we're sort of lucky today.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
Know, and the next generation, the children of the future are really going to be lucky. You go to a high school, any high school, and you ask for a raise of hands who believes in extraterrestrial life, I'm pretty sure most, if not all, the hands are going to go up, because every time I ask somebody young, they're like, oh, yeah, aliens absolutely exist. Far,
yep.
far different than what I experienced when I was in school in the 80s. I was the oddball. You know, I was at a small school. It was a small private Greek Orthodox school. I'm Greek. And so my parents wanted me, since English was my second language, they wanted me to go to a school where Greek was also taught so I could learn English as well. And so my graduating class of eighth grade, which was pretty much the same people from kindergarten, was 15 people. I was the only one who was talking about aliens and UFOs and paranormal. They thought I was just from, you know, definitely off my rocker. So, Maestro, what's your favorite case? Maestro on with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's your favorite case? What do you think of Travis?
Wow. Interesting. Pretty interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are you the skeptic of the group?
Well, I try to look at it from all angles, basically. And somewhere in between trying to find a humor in it all. So.
Well, hey, you know what? When something as terrifying is happening to you, what better way to look at it and throw some humor at it, you know? That's the best way, if you have
right?
some sort of trauma, than to turn it into humor so you don't have that scar in you anymore.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's
it definitely heals.
That's way to look at it, for sure.
Here, I'll give you an example. I had three times, unfortunately, I don't know what I did in my past life or what I'm supposed to learn in this life, but three times I should have been dead, and I mean like literally dead. One time I went through a windshield. The upper right quadrant of my face was ripped off. I was able to touch my skull underneath my skin. More than half my blood was gone by the time I reached the hospital. They couldn't find an IV. I shouldn't have survived that. Then 22 surgeries later, something messes up in the surgery. I ended up in a coma for 45 days. In that coma, I died because I had a near-death experience. And when I woke up, I lost some feeling in my hand. I'm crippled in my left, in my ulnar nerve, which controls your pinky and your ring finger. So I try to chalk up with some humor and saying, well, hey, guess what? I don't have to worry about being burnt or worrying about pain anymore, you know?
Right.
I need to talk to you. Those are hugely transformative events.
Yeah.
I had a 20-month stint of autoimmune recurring pneumonia, which I should have taken
pretty wild
again, and I survived. And I'm a skydiver too, so I always face life that way. You know, it's like I'm putting myself in front of danger, but at the same time, of course, if you have no fear, if you're jumping, then you shouldn't be jumping. You know, that's what any real jumper is going to tell you. So do I still have fear? Yes. But am I still engaging in something very extreme with the possibility that it's not going to be a small accident, knock on wood, if something goes wrong, your chances are going to end up dead. It's not like you're going to end up with a broken arm or a bruised knee. You know, something happens, you're going to hit the ground at terminal velocity in one way or another. You're not coming back.
Yeah.
Well, apparently you came back, didn't you?
I did. But not fortunately, I didn't
pass away and I needed to jump. It was just a coma incident that I had the near-death experience. A very crazy near-death experience. I rarely talked about this. I did a YouTube. People were asking me to do it on my show. So what I did, instead of using it as one of the days where I had a guest, I had a special stream on it on a Saturday where I talked about it. But essentially, I could tell you the quick rundown is that I was speaking to someone who was dead, who had died in the 80s. And I remember that the wind, the light, that the air had an element of light. So the stronger the wind gust, the more it would blind you. And I remember speaking to this gentleman, and it's a longer story than that of how I got to talking to him. You know, he was on a really awkward place on a boat that was beached, but I was talking to him, and I don't remember what we were talking about, and then something hits my head, not physically, like an idea or a realization, and I said, wait a minute, didn't you die in 1988? And he said yes, and he smiled, and all of a sudden, the wind started gushing so much to it's blinding, and then I'm awake. In 45 days went by in what seemed to me like 10 minutes.
Yeah, isn't that incredible? All those date changes where there's all that time distortion, and there's so many common denominators between near-death experiences, UFO encounters, high strange encounters. That's what my book is about. It's about perceptual abilities in human beings. And, you know, people say, oh, there's a connection between UFOs and paranormal events and cryptid events. Well, yeah, the connection is the human being. That is the connection. And my research has shown, anyway, it's extraordinary. So I'm sure you've read all of Brian Weiss's stuff, huh?
Brian Weiss, no. Why does that name ring a bell? And I don't know if I have any of his books in my library.
He did I'm pretty sure he did a lot of the work on near-death experiences.
What you mentioned earlier, it almost sounds like a scene from Contact with Jodie Foster, where she's like talking to an image that appears as her dad, right? And
yeah,
she
goes, and it was a beach.
And,
absolutely.
Remember that beach? That is exactly
right.
What it felt like. Just that perfect
yeah.
beach, you know, the glistening light on the ocean. I mean, that's what it felt like. That's what I saw, for crying out loud, you know.
Wow.
And I was in the hospital room. I mean, like 30, 40 miles away. I was nowhere near, you know, for any reason to be up and walking, let alone to be on the shores. By the way, open with nobody on it but me and this boat of two people sitting down and this one guy standing up. So, yeah, it was definitely an event that I don't think I'll ever forget. I mean, I can remember so vividly. And you know how they talk about dreams, how you forget them so quickly unless they're something that was so emotional or something like that? Well, this was definitely not a dream because I can recount every single detail from it. It's bizarre, to say the least.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, Dr. J, we're closing down on this episode of Scarycast, but I can tell you that this has been one of the most interesting times that I've ever had, to have Angela here, to have Papa Stro here, and I have been listening to everything you said. We are we're so glad you've been here. Well, I'm going to go on behalf of Angelia and Papa Stro. Will you come back and hang out with us again?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It was extraordinary, guys. It was such a fun night and great conversation. And, you know, I enjoyed speaking with you so much. So keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Such a pleasure.
Absolutely. I would love to.
Well, okay, let me go ahead and tell you what Dr. J and I are going to do. In just a little less than a week, we're going to be talking with our buddy Robin McCray, who is an expert.
Yay.
Well, who is an enthusiast, in my opinion, So yeah, you know her, don't you, Angelia?
Oh, she's one of my dearest friends. We've almost spoken every day since the conference.
Exactly. So I'm introduced Dr. J to Will Rotten, and then we'd like to have everybody back. And I'll tell you what, there are a lot of good things to explore and discover when we talk
Absolutely.
With Dr. J here on Scarycast. I want to thank, first of all, Dr. J, I want to thank you for being here. We really appreciate you coming. I want to thank Angelia.
Oh, it's an honor. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome, Angelia. Thanks so much for being here and sparking this discovery. And we love you. You're great.
No, thank you so much for always having me on. It's just an honor. It was an honor to be with everyone tonight. I enjoyed it so much. Thank you again.
You're welcome. And Papa Stroh, if you weren't here, it wouldn't be right. I can tell you that.
Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. So I'll tell you what, we are 3 minutes or 4 minutes, depending on your time frame, from ending Scarycast tonight, but we'll be back. We will have Dr. J back with us in a couple of weeks. He and I are going to be doing some discussions with some other folks in the paranormal universe, and I'm so grateful to have him here. I'm so grateful to have my co-hosts and my friends, Angelia, Papa Stroh. I'll tell you what, Papa Stroh will be with me at Lizard Man Festival, and I'll tell you what, when we get there, we've got some really great guests, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be more of this. So all I've got to say is thank you so much, everybody, for being here. This is Dr. John signing off, and the British lady will be here in a minute. But I tell you what, it's been a great episode, and we will see you back again. Actually, we'll see you next week at 11 p.m. Eastern time. More great stuff, and we'll talk to all of you soon. Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. J. Thank you, Angelia. And, of course, without Papa Stroh, it wouldn't be possible. So thanks a lot, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Take care. Good night. So strange. So